not. I said I'd get it done, Horn. I just need to find him again. We might not be able to track his old truck, but we can find his reporter friend's car.
Good. I will consider this in your hands now. Horn stopped the cart behind the pro shop and stepped out. Let me know when you finish it. I need to get back to L.A. Enjoy the rest of the course. You need the practice. You drive. I need to make a call, Horn said as they approached his Aston Martin Vanquish S, its silver color cleverly called Skyfall by the marketers at the British car company. Horn couldn't bring himself to buy a Tesla, the car that most of his competitors in the California finance world seemed to prefer, chalking up their concern for the environment to a moral vanity he simply could not stand. No matter how fast, an electric car could never muster up the mixed feelings of admiration and jealousy that his 12-cylinder Aston Martin did when he dropped it with a valet. After ensuring that Agnon had carefully slid the Krieghoff into its leather case and set it in the back seat, Horn lowered himself into the passenger side and pulled out his phone. He disconnected it from the car's Bluetooth and stared impatiently at the screen, though he knew that the canyons surrounding Oak Tree blocked all cell service. Saul cautiously maneuvered the sports car down toward the freeway, expecting every turn to draw criticism. Once back in cell range, Horn made a call.
It's Horn. I need you to get creative on dealing with James Reese.
Without waiting for an answer, Horn terminated the connection.
Who is that? Agnon asked his boss.
That's Saul. Was the final option. Now keep your eyes on the road and let me get some work done.
Agnon did as he was told.
Chapter 40. Wyoming Backcountry. The biggest adjustment for Reese when it came to targeting individuals on his own personal crusade was the lack of intelligence support. Overseas, an entire contingent of support personnel, not to mention the massive U.S. intelligence apparatus, was on hand to help guys like Reese find, fix, finish, and exploit the enemy. On this mission, not only did Reese lack that support, but he had to do it all without creating a trail of evidence. It wasn't that he was afraid of getting arrested, since no punishment from the state could match what he'd already endured. He had to elude the law and postpone the death he knew was coming. It just couldn't happen until his mission was complete. The longer Reese could keep the other side and the law in the dark, the better. Knowing that he was already dead from a tumor growing in his brain was nothing short of liberating. His sole focus was on bringing justice to those who had taken everything from him. He felt no restraint, no moral conflict. He was clear in his purpose and vision. Understanding the violence he was about to bring to those who had killed his wife, daughter, unborn son, and teammates gave him an odd sense of peace. Reese had set aside a week for surveillance, only to discover that his target readily broadcast his every movement to the world via social media. It was as if he were saying, "Here I am, come and kill me." Having lived low profile for his entire professional life, this mindset was baffling to Reese. Boykin's movements were routine and predictable, and the terrain and timing were ideal for what Reese had envisioned back in Coronado. He hadn't been in the mountains since the op went bad in Afghanistan, but hiking the Wyoming backcountry with nothing but lightweight clothes and a small pack in the daylight felt a lot different than patrolling hostile territory in total darkness, burdened with the heavy tools of war. He assumed that he'd see a few hunters scouting this close to the season opener, but he never came across another soul as he followed the ridgeline that paralleled the highway. He actually walked right past the area that he eventually chose, only spotting it as he glassed back toward the country he'd just crossed. The U-shaped notch in the mountainside offered an unobstructed view down the length of the highway without being exposed in any direction other than from above. The only thing above him today were clear blue skies, so the chances of being spotted by anything but a helicopter were slim. Reese took out a small notebook and his laser rangefinder, making a careful sketch of the area and noting the range to various terrain features.
As cars and trucks made their way up the northbound road, he envisioned the timing of taking a shot at each. The best spot seemed to be a dip in the road 625 yards away, and the configuration of the road and elevation matched his accident theory. It was as close to perfect as he could hope for. He marked the site on both his map and GPS and headed out in search of the most direct path back to his vehicle. With 2 days to kill, Reese spent some time exploring the area. Parked in front of the Soda Springs, Idaho Public Library, he turned on his second-hand iPhone and checked in with the world via the free Wi-Fi. He had a message on Signal from Katie's alias.
"It's me. I made it safely to my brother's. You saved my life. Be safe."
He prayed that Katie would be careful. He couldn't stand the thought of her getting hurt or killed trying to help him. No time to focus on that now. He then logged into Spider Oak, ensuring his VPN was engaged, and opened the folder he shared with Ben Edwards.
"Hey, bro. Got some info on the gangbangers. Meet you at your new home when you get back."
Even though it was supposedly secure, Reese and Ben still kept their comms as innocuous as possible. He didn't have a way to make a secure voice call to Ben without the potential of leading someone to his location. It would be obvious to anyone at that point that he was after Boykin, so the information on the gangbangers would have to wait. He drove back east to the spot he'd picked to camp. Just another guy in a truck getting away from town to spend time in the outdoors, and spent the next 24 hours going over the maps and imagery and readying his gear for his patrol to the hide site. The night before his planned hit, he built a small fire. There was something primal about fires. Since the early Stone Age, fires had quite literally sustained human life. They offered warmth and allowed the heat treating of hardwoods and eventually metals, turning them into weapons for hunting and war. They permitted cooking and early pottery, were natural gathering places, could signal, and were almost always a part of ceremonial tradition. Fires were sacred, but more than anything else, fires offered hope. Reese pondered the paradox. There was no hope for Marcus Boykin, just as there was no hope for James Reese. Staring into the burning embers of the small campfire, Reese started to remember. It had been just before his last deployment. He had taken Lauren and Lucy on a pre-deployment camping trip to Big Sur. Nestled into the Northern California coast, just south of Carmel, was a stretch of land that Reese considered to be one of the most beautiful on Earth, the sea and the mountains, Reese's favorites. Lauren had retired for the night into the tent, leaving Reese and Lucy to connect by the fire, knowing that 6 long months of separation lay ahead. Years before, Lauren had confided to Reese that every time he left the house, whether to deploy or train, she knew that he might never be coming back. She had accepted his chosen profession and would not be the kind of wife and mother who was always worried about her husband. She was immensely proud of what he did, but she had a daughter to raise, and she wasn't about to let that child see her in a constant state of worry. When Reese left, they would get on with their lives, exploring, learning, and growing. In hindsight, she must have also been tired from supporting the life that grew inside her. Reese assumed that she had wrestled with whether to tell him and had decided to let it be a surprise when he returned. Lauren had always loved surprises, and there were so few joyful ones left in life. This was a gift she could give to him. He also knew that she would want him focused on the job overseas, not distracted thinking about his pregnant wife. That was something she could give the families of the men under Reese's command. They needed Reese focused on the task of leading SEALs into combat. To do it right would require his full measure of devotion. Reese had watched his daughter inch the marshmallow, skewered on the end of a straightened wire hanger closer to the fire.
"Wait a little bit longer, sweetie," Reese had cautioned. "Wait for the embers so you can get it a nice golden brown."
Lucy just smiled and moved it closer and closer to the fire until it burst into flames, and she burst into giggles as Reese leaned forward and blew out what was now a charred mess. They had hiked into a desolate stretch of shoreline to avoid the more populated areas of Big Sur State Park and set up camp on the beach. In a state that had laws governing almost all aspects of daily life, it was surprising and refreshing to be allowed to still enjoy driftwood fires along the coast. Reese and Lucy were bundled up, cuddled together against the crisp cold of the Pacific twilight, in a lightweight backpacker's chair behind the fire, and looking out over the rocky shore, the waves, and the distant horizon. Reese would remember that sunset every day while overseas, would remember holding his little angel, wrapped in a poncho and lightweight blanket, listening to the cadence of the surf as the sky transitioned into night, constellation after constellation breaking through the darkness, much to Lucy's wonderment.
"What's that bright one?"
she had asked, pointing skyward. Though not an astronomer by any stretch of the imagination, Reese had a rudimentary knowledge of the constellations. It was the byproduct of a life spent outdoors. He smiled, remembering when he asked his father the same question all those years ago, under the same night sky. "That's Orion. See those stars there?" Reese asked, pointing skyward. "That's Orion's belt. Makes them easy to spot up there, doesn't it?" Lucy nodded in agreement. "If you look hard enough, you can see his shield and club. He was a hunter."
"How'd he get up there?"
asked a quizzical Lucy.
"Well, if I remember correctly," Reese continued, struggling to recall his mythology, "he was stung by a scorpion, which now occupies a spot on the other side of the sky, so they never see each other."
"That's weird," Lucy commented. "Were they friends?"
"Not exactly," Reese replied, hoping she didn't ask too many more specific questions as to what had led Orion and the Scorpion to their ultimate positions in the cosmos. Thankfully, she switched topics to one Reese knew was coming.
"Daddy, why do you have to go away on a big trip?"
Reese and Lauren had called shorter training trips little trips and referred to the upcoming deployment as a big trip, easier for a young mind to grasp and come to terms with.
"Well, sometimes daddies have to go away on big trips."
In their circle of friends, daddies were always leaving on big trips. Reese felt lucky that Lucy didn't quite realize sometimes those daddies didn't come home.
"This is my last big trip, sweetheart. Then I'm not going away again. I'm going to stay home with you and Mommy. I can't wait."
"I can't wait either, Dada,"
she said, as much to herself as to him.
"Do you go away because of the bad people?"
Reese paused. He and Lauren had shielded her as much as possible from some of the harsher realities of growing up as a military child in a country on constant war footing. This was her time to be innocent. Obviously, she'd picked up more than they thought.
"Sometimes daddies need to fight the bad guys far away, so we don't have to do it here, in our country. We do it to keep us free. You and your mom are a big part of it. The three of us are a team. We all make sacrifices to keep our country free."
"When I grow up, I want to fight bad guys too,"
Reese swallowed, a lump rising in his throat.
"My hope is you won't have to, sweetheart. I love you, Angel."
"I love you too, Daddy."
She nestled her head into her father's shoulder and cuddled up against him. Reese would not have wanted to be any place else on Earth right then. It was that memory to which he would return throughout deployment. When he was back from a mission, dirty and tired, just before lying down to rest, he would return to that beach, to the waves, the fire, the marshmallows, and Orion. It was to that memory he returned now, hoping nothing more than for one more chance to hold his daughter safely in his arms, rocking her to sleep on a distant beach. To him, that was heaven.
"See you soon, baby girl,"
he whispered into the dying embers of the fire as he drifted off to sleep. Chapter 41. The sheriff of Lincoln County, Wyoming, arrived on the scene an hour after the call went out. His office was down in Afton, and the crashed Mercedes SUV was at the extreme north end of his jurisdiction. Two highway patrolmen, Two of his deputies and a state game and fish officer were on site along with the detective from his office. An ambulance had pulled in, but the paramedic and driver were still inside, since there was not much they could do for the man in the silver Mercedes. One of the trooper's cars was parked to block a lane of the highway as he stood in the road to direct the occasional driver around what had become a crime scene. A tow truck driver stood staring down at the shredded vehicle, obviously trying to figure out how he was going to remove it from the steep ditch. The sheriff approached the gaggle of law enforcement officers gathered on the road's shoulder above the vehicle.
"All right, what do we have?"
he asked, glancing at his watch before peering down the ravine. The detective spoke up. "Sheriff, as you know, the highway patrol discovered this vehicle just after 9 a.m. this morning. They saw the skid marks on the highway and pulled over to investigate. EMS arrived and discovered what appears to be a bullet wound at the center of the driver's face and an exit wound at the back of his skull. Based on the trauma to his head, I'd say it was a rifle round, maybe a 30 caliber or so, just looking at the entry." The detective motioned toward the fresh black marks on the roadway. "Our theory at this point is that the driver gets shot while heading this way, and the speed and abrupt turn of the wheel caused the vehicle to flip over and down the embankment."
"That certainly makes sense. Except the part about the 06 round to the face. Who shot this guy and why?" "It's opening day for deer in this unit, Sheriff,"
the game and fish officer offered.
"Some guy with a tag in his pocket, probably an out-of-stater, takes a shot at his skyline buck from the road. It's illegal, but we know what happens. He misses, shoots over the top of the deer, and the bullet's trajectory takes it over this rise. Gravity drops the bullet down into that dip in the road, just as this poor bastard is coming the other way. I'd say this guy's number was up." "I'll buy it. I've seen stranger things. Who is he?"
The detective answered. "DL says he's Marcus Boykin. He's driving on a New York license, but we have a listing for a Marcus Boykin at Star Valley Ranch. Typical summer resident." Satisfied that his men were conducting a thorough and proper investigation, the sheriff nodded and turned back toward his government-supplied Ford Expedition. He was the featured speaker at a Chamber of Commerce lunch at noon, and he didn't intend to be late. Chapter 42. Bird Rock, California. Invigorated by the shot of adrenaline the morning's success had brought, Reese drove straight through to Southern California, stopping only for food and fuel at hole-in-the-wall gas stations, all paid for in cash. He arrived at Ben's place at midnight, backing down the driveway and into the garage where he unloaded his gear. Even at night, he could tell it was a beautiful place, a contemporary condo in the trendy Bird Rock neighborhood of San Diego, nestled between La Jolla and Pacific Beach. The design was open, incorporating light natural woods with industrial steel finishes. Huge floor-to-ceiling windows led seamlessly to a deck that overlooked the dark ocean. Even though it was a few houses back from the cliffs, Reese could still hear the surf breaking on the rocks below. He took a shower and checked his Spider Oak folder, sending Edwards a message that said only, "At your place, bring breakfast," before hitting the sack. 7 hours later, he heard someone pounding on the door and realized that he'd slept like a rock. He grabbed the Glock from his bedside table and looked through the crack in the bedroom blinds to find Ben's rental car parked below him in the driveway. Still half asleep, he tossed his handgun onto the bed and opened the back door wearing boxers and a t-shirt.
"Holy shit, did I wake you up? I can come back at noon if you want. You think you're back in college, frat boy? You need a haircut and a shave. You're starting to look like the bad guys. I brought your favorite, Night and Day Cafe."
Reese gave Ben the one-finger salute as he walked into the condo's small kitchen to make coffee while Ben unpacked the short order to-go food on the counter. Taking a huge bite of his breakfast burrito, Reese gestured to the surrounding condo with its sweeping view of the Pacific.
"Nice place."
"Yeah, my employer has a few of these scattered across the country. We use them for debriefings and meets that require an off-site due to sensitivity issues. This one is pretty nice and hardly ever gets used."
"Our tax dollars at work, huh? This place must have cost you hundreds.
Good old Uncle Sugar.
Ben said and smiled. He finished his breakfast and packed a dip of tobacco into his lower lip before pulling a file folder out of a nylon backpack he'd hung on the back of his chair.
All right, bro. It turns out that the shitheads who did this weren't local gangbangers. They were legit bad hombres from Mexico. DEA watches these guys very closely, as you know, and actually have them coming and going the night of the attack. I don't have specific IDs on the shooters, but we know they are Cartel Jalisco Nueva Generacion, CJNG, or New Generation, and we know where they live.
Edward slid a series of photos across the kitchen table, each depicting a different angle of the same three-story concrete block structure